panel of our, or the afternoon session of our December panel. I'm Francie Reedman from Gretna. I'm pleased to be joined on my left by Judge Larry Welch from Plattsmouth, and on my right, Judge Mike Pirtle from Omaha. We have four cases on the call today. We'll take them in the order in which they are listed. To the extent that you have any confidential or private information that you would like to keep that way, please remember that we are live streamed, and it's also archived, both video and audio. So if you need to use just first names or initials, just keep that in mind. And with that, we will start with our first case of the day, Lauer versus Golden Living Center.
May I approach?
Lauer versus Golden Living Center.
Good afternoon. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Christopher Welsh, and I'm here on behalf of the appellant in this case. I would like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. What I'd like to do is take the court through just a little bit of procedure history before I get into my argument why you should reverse and remand this case back to the district court. This case was filed in January of 2017. An answer was filed in March of 2015. There was a motion for transfer that was filed on March 30th of 2017. The District Court of Douglas County granted that motion on March 31st of 2017. The parties sent out written discovery in late June of 2017. And then in August of 2017, the defendant filed a motion for summary judgment. That motion for summary judgment was not heard until December 18th, 2017, and the court took it under advisement. And the parties sat and waited. The plaintiff in this case filed a motion on October 31st, 2018 to set the matter for trial and a scheduling order, because there hadn't been a scheduling order in this case, and everything was at a standstill because of the motion for summary judgment that was filed so early in the case. There were no deadlines set, no expert deadlines, nothing. The court, we had a hearing a year ago, and the court said that it would issue an order on the pending motion for summary judgment, and at that same time set the matter for a pretrial conference to set a trial date and scheduling deadlines. On January 10th, 2019, the court finally issued an order on the motion for summary judgment. And the reason why we're here, if you take a look at the court's order on page 5, where the court states the ultimate issue boils down to whether or not the court properly excluded the plaintiff's expert opinion regarding causation. That's why we're here. That wasn't before the court on the defendant's motion for summary judgment. Their motion for summary judgment was on standard of care only. There was an affidavit they submitted by a nurse from Golden Living. She did not address standard of care causation anywhere in her affidavit. On page 17 of the transcript of the hearing on the motion for summary judgment, counsel for the appellee states, I acknowledge I have not presented an affidavit from an expert physician saying there is no causation for this summary judgment hearing. What the court did, it took the two affidavits by the two nurses that said, one, their affidavit said that they met the standard of care. They didn't go into any great deal, any details to explain how they met the standard of care or what the standard of care is. We submitted an affidavit from a nurse and laid out in great detail why they fell below the standard of care.
My understanding is the court kind of had an issue with the affidavit in that it didn't specifically state what the standard of care was, but rather stated several things that the defendant failed to do.
Right. And that was the standard of care. She was critical of what they did not do. And what the court did, it decided to play fact finder, which wasn't the role of the court. The court took the two affidavits and decided to weigh those facts instead of Their job isn't to resolve the facts. Their job is to determine whether or not there is a material fact that exists. And there were two competing affidavits. One said they met the standard of care, and the other one said they didn't meet the standard of care. And therefore, that should have been the end of it. The motion for summary judgment should have been overruled. What the court then went on to do is to say, well, you don't have an expert that says anything about causation. Therefore, when we get to this ultimate question on page 5, it boils down to whether or not the court properly excluded plaintiff's expert opinion regarding causation. There was never an opinion on causation.
Are you familiar with Bone versus Regional West Medical Center?
I am a little bit, yes.
Okay. My understanding is in that case, the court also kicked it on summary judgment on proximate cause without there really being anything there on proximate cause, but rather only on standard of care. Can you differentiate the two?
Well, the differentiation is that this case was in, we were only 2 months into discovery. There wasn't a scheduling order. There were no deadlines set. And what happens in nursing home cases and malpractice cases typically happens, you have to name experts, liability causation experts. Once your experts are named, depositions are taken, and you find out their opinions. If there's issues with the opinions that are being offered, motions for summary judgment might be filed. Sometimes there's a motion for summary judgment strictly on liability, like in this case. Sometimes there's a motion for summary judgment filed on causation, or there might be a Daubert challenge on something. None of that happened here. It was a total surprise that there was even, that the court was even going to consider the issue of causation. The burden hadn't been met on their part. There remained a material issue of fact just on the pleadings alone, because they did not have an expert to say that there was no causation. What happened wasn't the result of anyone's negligence. Their expert merely says that they met the standard of care. And the court went out of its way to say, well, since in paragraph 10 of your expert's report, her affidavit, she can't testify regarding causation. And I told the court, that's for another day. The issue before the court is liability and liability only.
Do you agree with that, with the court's finding on that, though, that an RN would not have been competent to testify about proximate cause?
I don't think it's as clear as just saying that bold statement. I think that if you can establish that the nurse has the knowledge and stuff, she might be able to give opinions on causation. What the other side is relying on the Ewing's case, and that case is very distinguishable from our case. In that particular case, Joe Daly, who represented the correctional center, had Joyce Black as an expert on standard of care and causation. And when the plaintiffs took Joyce Black's deposition, he asked a hypothetical question on causation. And then he named her as an expert. And the court said, no, that's not going to work. And in that case, how that's so much different than our case is, they filed that case in 2011. That case was right before trial. Discovery had been completed, and the plaintiffs, the only expert that they had on causation was Nurse Black, based upon her hypothetical opinion. For those reasons, I see that I'm into my rebuttal. Unless there's any specific questions that I can answer, I would reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the court, I'm Chuck Wilburn, co-counsel, and I represent the appellee in this case, Golden Living, the nursing home that filed for summary judgment in this case. We believe that the district court was proper in denying the motion to alter or amend judgment that was originally filed after granting the motion for summary judgment. It was proper for the reasons stated in the order. One, we don't believe that the court made a factual finding. It looked at the evidence that was presented to it to even determine if there was a material issue of fact. And two, we don't feel that the court improperly placed the burden on the defendant, or excuse me, on the plaintiff in this case.
When you filed your motion for summary judgment in the lower court, did you include in that motion that you were challenging the issue of proximate cause?
I believe that we were challenging it as a general. The motion itself did not say we're challenging standard of care and specifically proximate cause. The motion was pretty broad in saying that we were saying there was no issue of material fact.
Did you present any evidence that the defendant's actions were not the proximate cause?
There was no evidence presented.
So how does the burden become the plaintiff's when they're the non-moving party?
In this, the motion for summary judgment had it on there. Excuse me, not the motion. The argument that was presented was they still don't have an opinion on proximate cause. There was never an opinion on proximate cause.
But doesn't the moving party have the burden to prove that if the evidence was as presented, that the court would rule in their favor at a trial?
Right. And so we presented, we had no affidavit, and I acknowledge that, but our evidence is essentially more of a lack of evidence, that there is no opinion one way or other on proximate cause. And I think it's important to look at this case for what was initially alleged for negligence, because the plaintiffs alleged 5 allegations of negligence when they first filed.
And then it was kind of whittled down to
and
two.
And then they abandoned 3 of those based off of our affidavits. And when you get there and you're looking at the arguments that were more or less presented at the summary judgment hearing, you know, there was no notice about those. Plaintiff was left with the broad breach of standard of care, which doesn't really go into detail of how we breached the standard of care in the complaint anymore once you knock off the first 3, and then failure to train. And so when we present our affidavit of Amy Dickus that went through, the entire chart is attached to her affidavit and describes everything that the nurses did through those 3 days that Ms. Lauer was in the nursing facility, that then shifted the burden to then for the plaintiff to come up with competent evidence to show how there would be a material issue of fact.
But that was on standard of care.
That's on standard of care. But
so how did proximate cause then get thrown into this?
Well, I think proximate cause gets thrown into it because they cannot succeed without an expert opinion on proximate cause.
Well, they may not be able to survive a trial on that, but was it enough to get by a motion for summary judgment?
I think it is if you look at the Ewers case, because that's exactly what happened in the Ewers case. The Saunders County filed a motion for summary judgment. There's no opinion on proximate cause, and the court upholds and the decision on granting summary judgment. And so when plaintiffs tried to, in their affidavit with Cheryl Deakinson, tried to establish proximate cause.
Wait, in the Ewers case, wasn't there testimony about, that's the pulmonary embolism case,
correct?
Correct? Okay, wasn't there testimony, though, from the nurse that the plaintiff hadn't suffered a pulmonary embolism because if he had, you would have seen something 2 or 3 days earlier?
That is in the opinion, yes, that's what she testified.
So is that not proximate cause?
I don't think she's qualified to give that opinion.
Well, and doesn't the court say that, kind of assuming without deciding, blah, blah, blah?
The court says that wasn't challenged at the lower level.
Evidence, it's summary judgment. If nobody's going to challenge it, and her testimony is he didn't suffer a pulmonary embolism, isn't that not proximate cause?
They get to it, but they didn't. The Ewers court did not address that and say the burden had automatically shifted to the plaintiff to come up with proximate cause. If you read, once they start talking about proximate cause, they say in giving all deference to that the standard of care was breached, plaintiff still needed to have approximate causation opinion. And then they went through and established that they did not have that.
All right, so is it your position that if you file a motion for summary judgment, you're the defense, at that point, the burden shifts to the plaintiff to put on evidence to each and every element of the claim, notwithstanding what you put in the record?
I would say with proximate cause in a medical malpractice case, yes. Because you can't assume proximate cause in a medical malpractice case. You need an expert opinion almost all the time. And I think without that, then there's still no evidence of, if that goes uncontroverted at trial, there's no evidence of proximate cause, and the plaintiff will lose.
Is yours your authority for that? Is the Ewers case?
Is the Ewers case, that's where it appears that that was going on in that. And I realize that plaintiff now is making the argument that that we were very early on in the case and there wasn't scheduling orders or anything like that. But I filed the motion for summary judgment in August, and it wasn't heard until December. If plaintiff wanted to do more discovery during that time or say, you know, we need a scheduling order, we're not prepared for this, plaintiff could have filed something, talked to me on the phone to place it. But we sat for 4 months waiting to be heard, and nothing happened during that time. And I think even with the affidavit of Cheryl Deaconson, I think plaintiff knew he needed proximate cause, but that's why he put it in Cheryl Deaconson's. But again, I don't think nurses are competent to render approximate causation opinion.
All right, let's go to the standard of care issue for a second. Are you separately arguing that their affidavit wasn't sufficient to identify what the standard of care was? Wasn't it enough for them to say they departed from the standard of care in the following particulars?
I don't think it is enough to say that. The reason I say that is because we have the burden to show that we met the standard of care. And so we attach all the nurses' notes where we're charting every day for 3 days, we're contacting the doctor, we're talking to the family members because they are there in the room. And then when it shifts back to the plaintiff and Cheryl Deaconson says, we didn't monitor the Ms. Lauer or we needed to contact Dr. Misek. I think she needed to prove more what we should have done in the circumstances of someone being there for 3 days over the 4th of July weekend.
So let's take an example. One of them was failure to properly monitor her hydration levels, correct?
Correct.
So they're saying that you departed from the standard of care by failing to monitor and adhere to her hydration levels. Are you saying that you first have to say it's the standard of care to monitor her hydration levels and you fell below it because you failed to monitor those? Is that your position?
Not so much in that. It's more of when they're saying we need to contact the doctor, and who knows if hydration level is even a material issue of fact. That, I think, also gets tied into causation of why that matters. I think a breach of a standard of care ultimately still needs to be the causation of it. But to address your point, with certain things, I think it is appropriate for the standard of the care to say, you didn't do this. Plaintiff cites in the brief, or in his brief, that when a doctor doesn't give, give informed consent that chemotherapy may cause death, and not giving that notice, it would be a breach of the standard of care. So it sometimes can get there, but I think in this case, Cheryl Deaconson needed to say more of what the nursing home needed to do, because otherwise, the court is left to guess of whether or not the standard of care was really breached.
So give me an example. What more should they have said with respect to failure to monitor her hydration levels?
For failure to monitor her hydration levels, I think she, one, could have said they didn't actually do it by citing to the record. She didn't really cite to it. She just says they didn't do it. And two, she needs to lay out what appropriate hydration levels would to be in that. How often you monitor hydration levels? Is it every 12 hours? Is it every hour? So on and so forth.
So it wasn't specific enough.
Correct.
Had any, except for exchange of interrogatories, had any depositions been taken before you filed your Motion for summary judgment.
No depositions had been taken, requests for admissions had been sent, and discovery had been, interrogatories and requests for production had been exchanged.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
How much time does the appellant have left?
1 minute and 51 seconds, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Is there a reason you didn't try to schedule depositions after the motion was filed?
Typically, when you, in practice, when a motion for summary judgment is filed, typically when it's filed early on, it's for the purpose to flush out whether or not you have an expert. Once we produced our expert, I will tell you, the practice, in the 20 years I've been doing this, 9 out of 10 defendants withdraw their motion for summary judgment because you have now named an expert, produced an affidavit or a report, and then they want to go take the expert's deposition.
In your answers to interrogatories, did you identify an expert on proximate cause?
No. We hadn't had the opportunity to take any depositions of any of the nurses, anybody involved in the care that was provided at the nursing home. Typically, you don't do that until after you take depositions because the expert needs all that information to rely on it to offer opinions. We were stuck with relying strictly on what the medical records said.
Is there not a mechanism, though, to request a continuance of the motion for summary judgment?
There certainly is.
But one wasn't filed.
No, I didn't think it was necessary once we produced an expert on to refute their
So what
motion.
Made you think standard of care was the only issue?
Because that's the only thing that's listed in the affidavit and the motion. There's nothing about causation. They're critical of that we don't have an expert, and they talk about you need to have a medical doctor to give an opinion on causation, but yet they don't have a medical doctor offering opinion on causation.
Right. I understand their position to be they didn't have to. That once they bring out the standard of care and evidence that they didn't breach it, the burden would have shifted to the plaintiff to prove all the elements. That's my understanding. Is that your understanding of what they're arguing?
That's my understanding, and I think it's contrary to the law in Nebraska. I see that my time's up. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Case is submitted. Counsel is excused.